light of overall what's in the bill, I mean, I'm not going to go into a lot of details, obviously, for something that we've been working on for a year. There are some things I think, you know, might pique the interest of members, but as I say, as for fiscal, there's nothing that requires an appropriation, but there are things that have fiscal impacts within the pension funds that I do need to bring to the committee's attention. So, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'll just kind of give you a quick snapshot of what the overall bill does.
Certainly.
And talk about the fiscal impact. Articles 1 and 2 deal with the post-retirement fund, and just to be clear so members understand that, the major pension funds are actually separated into two different funds. The current employees are in the active fund, and they pay their contributions in, both the employers and employees. The money is invested. When they retire, then their money is moved into what's called a post-retirement fund. There's no more contributions from the employer employees. It's invested. Some of the post-retirement funds have been running into some problems over the years for a number of reasons. The stock market, not sufficient investments, actuarial changes. And so the major funds would like to the opportunity as a trigger mechanism that if the funding of the post fund drops to 80% in 1 year or 85% in two consecutive years, they want the authority to merge the active fund and the post fund into one to provide more stability to the overall fund. This bill does not require at this moment that it happens. It's just saying that if in the future the funding goes down for the post fund, that would happen. I will note that the major funds, MSRS and PERA, and their members are on board with this. Education Minnesota has some concerns about that, about their this happening with TRA. I should note that one of the arguments would be, why should a current employee want to assume the liabilities of the retirees? But on the other hand, no current employee wants to go into an underfunded retirement fund either. And the TRA right now projects out about a $1.5 billion deficit. You know, the mortgage isn't due today. I mean, it's a rolling thing, but they are underfunded as we speak today. Those are Articles 1 and 2. Article 1 is actually some cleanup language. Article 2 actually has the merger. Article 3 deals with what's called post-retirement options. These are individuals that complete their government service, retire, and then they actually want to come back and work after they retire. And we already have some provisions. This kind of tightens up and cleans it up. What we don't want to do and what this does not allow is somebody to retire on a Friday and come back on Monday working as a consultant. They still have to have a break in service of at least 30 days. And there's some Social Security requirements in here as well, too. Article 4 deals with the joint and survivor benefit forms. We've had a number of issues in the Pension Commission over the years where you had an individual, often a male who retired, filled out the forms at some point, never told his spouse what he had done, and, of course, he gets this full retirement check. But then the male spouse, the employee, dies, and then the wife then discovers that her pension is cut off because he didn't make any provisions. He would have taken a reduced pension to provide for his wife, and we've had a couple of those over the years. This kind of changes the assumption that it would be assumed to be a joint benefit unless the spouses, and it's signed by both spouses, choose a different beneficiary. Article 5 is just a number of administrative provisions dealing with many of the funds, one of which is reestablishing the ability of former service members to buy back military credit and apply that to the pensions. This has been around for a few years. Frankly, it's very expensive. Not a lot of people take advantage of it, but some people still want it in there, so we've extended it there. In Article 6, dealing with the corrections plan, we've worked on this over years where you have a couple of people who work for the Department of Corrections, and a lot of them who have direct contact with inmates do want to retire earlier because, this is very physical work. It's dangerous work. But people who do not have direct contact with inmates, should not have that benefit. So we have a system by which we can identify a few positions, and every year we get one or two of those, and that's what this has of certain painting occupations and general maintenance of inmates who do have regular contact with the inmates and, would probably qualify. In Article 7, this is something that legislators need to pay attention to, and I'd certainly be happy to discuss it in quite depth. Legislators are in one of two retirement plans, and legislators elected through 1996 were initially put in an old plan for legislators only, which is called a defined benefit plan. That is, your pension is going to be decided by the number of years you serve and the pay that you received. You can leave the legislature and go to another government position and apply your years in the legislature to the other position. It may not be fair or not, but I mentioned the fact that, you know, Senator Neville, you know, did not even know what his pension provisions were, you know, but after he became a judge, he then discovered, and he's going to be a good judge, you know. I strongly support him being a judge. But had he just retired as a state senator with, say, 20 years of service, he would have gotten a nice pension based on 20 years in the Senate, 20 years based upon his Senate pay. When he qualifies for a pension as a judge, which he has to be on the bench for a few years to do that, he will be able to apply his 17 years in the Senate to his judicial pay plus the years on the bench to that pension. Former Representative Swigum, also with 29 years in the legislature, is able to apply his 29 years in the legislature to his now commissioner pay. So this is a significant benefit for those who are able to move on with a different job. Now, that's for legislators elected prior to through 1996. Those elected since 1996 have been in what's called the defined contribution plan. And those who wanted to move, and by the way, I moved into the defined contribution plan. This is the same plan that all of our employees are in. They have because there's a lot of turnover in these positions and with other positions, you know, within the some appointed positions within the administrative branch, you invest money. The employer matches the money, and then when you leave it, your pension is based upon the contributions that were made. Now, obviously, if you make more money, you make bigger contributions. If you serve longer, you make more contributions. But it really has no direct relation to your legislative pay or the number of years you served. It's a contribution-based plan. But there is a difference right now under law that legislators and constitutional officers cannot move into one of those defined benefit plans and take their service in, say, the legislature and apply that to to one of those situations, as I described with both former Speaker Swigum and Senator Neville and others too. Basically, they are prohibited from doing that. This bill would allow the legislators who are in the MSRS unclassified plan, the ones that we are in, to have that option, and also provides that legislators, if elected starting next year, starting this year, effective next January, would be able to choose which plan they want to be in, the defined benefit plan or the defined contribution plan. And actually, then they have an opportunity later on down the road after 10 years to make that switch. This is something, as I say, I want legislators to be aware of. There may be some political sensitivity to this one. Article 8 deals with privatization of hospitals. We've done this a number of years. This adds Rice Memorial Hospital, Radiology Department in Worthington Hospital. Article 9 deals with redistribution of state aid. When we closed out the Minneapolis Teachers Pension Fund, we redistributed the aid to Duluth Teachers, St. Paul, TRA. In the last couple of years, we've actually made adjustments, and this bill actually make some modifications in that, and I've got an amendment to deal with part of that because we need to close a gap in here. Article 10 deals with the issue of MNSCU, where you have people that have actually had a plan account that they've had, but then they leave and they can't be found, and what do you do with the unclaimed amounts? And so we try to have a system here for maintaining the money for a while, and then if it's unclaimed, what we do with it, and if they show up later on to pay them back. But, you know, they've got these accounts that sit there with where they don't know where to send the money.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzold, could you define a while?
Oh, these are IRAP accounts, the Higher Education Individual Retirement Account Plan, where they make contributions in, it's sort of like a 401k, isn't it? Something. Mr. Martin is here from the Executive Director of Pension Commission.
It's a defined contribution.
It's a contribution where you can use some of your own money to help contribute as a separate fund towards your retirement. And some of these people make the contribution, and then they leave and go on to another job, but they didn't take their money with them, and they don't. We've got to figure out how to get the money to them.
Sarah Olson.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, you're telling me what the account was, but you said we'll let them keep it for a while.
Okay.
And then do something else with it.
Sure.
With theirs.
It says,
what is a while?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, unclaimed accounts will transfer to a reserve account 6 months after unsuccessful attempts to locate the member or the survivors. And then they have to at least make attempts for at least 6 months to try to find them. And then I think if they do locate them, I'm trying to find the language here. What happens after this? It's on page 66 of the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, then what happens to the money? They aren't found within 6 months? I'm trying to find out what the motivation would be to try to find them or not. What happens to the money?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, page 66, line 28, if the account remains unclaimed after 5 years following the date the plan administrator first attempts to locate the former member or the survivor, spouse, or any beneficiary, the unclaimed account cancels and must be credited to the reserve account. And that's in paragraph B, which is used to offset the necessary expenses of the overall account plan.
So, Mr. Chairman, what article? You said article.
It's on page 66.
Article 10.
Article 10, section 3.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue on then. Article 11 is some various financial reporting. One thing of interest in here, and this is one of the fiscal impact, in changing some of the allocations of the money that goes from the Minneapolis teachers plan that has been closed out, some of the funds and that would have gone to the St. Paul teachers fund, and St. Paul is okay with doing this, is to have some of the money going to the pensions commission, $140,000, so that we can have our own actuary look over the other work of it. We used to have our own actuary. That was eliminated during budget crunches a few years ago. We don't really have our own actuary. We have to rely on the funds. Now, the reason why St. Paul wants to do this is because right now all the funds have a single actuary. St. Paul would like to be able to just have their own actuary, so not they're not at the end of the line, and they just by the savings and the moving money around, it frees up the money so the pension commission can actually have its own actuary review the work of the fund actuaries. In Article 12, this is dealing with this is an issue that had it appeared to have some controversy. I don't know that it does now. This is an issue that came forth out of a lawsuit involving Education Minnesota and the Osseo School District, where the Osseo School District made a decision on 401(3)(b) vendors, that is, where teachers wanted to be able to invest some of their own money into annuities, and a change was made where the employees wanted it to be invested one place, and the school district got a different vendor in there, and they were sued, and the result of the lawsuit was that the school district's position was upheld. So this says that the number and the identity of the vendors is subject to collective bargaining, so that the school districts are going to have to work with the union in figuring out how many and which vendors are to be available so that the teachers who want to invest their money have a say in where it goes. There has been and as I say, this had a little bit of controversy over on. I was told the governor's office originally has concerns about this. I'm told that they do not have concerns about this right now. Article 13 is a revisiting some issue we had last year on we made it much more difficult for people to qualify for duty disability. In fact, it was way too easy for some people to get disability payments. We tightened it up. This goes back and actually revisited it for people who've had excess of 20 years. There was a situation that came to our attention, which was probably an injustice of somebody who actually came up with a lower pension because of this. Now, with most individuals, they may qualify for a real pension anyway, the regular pension, soon after they get the disability one. So that is the preferred way we had to go. But there seemed to be an injustice here, and so we tried to correct that there. Article 14 deals solely with the Minneapolis Firefighters Fund. This is an issue that has a dispute between the firefighters and the Minneapolis City Council, but this says that when the association has 110% funding, then they can provide a supplemental benefit to the surviving pensioners, the so-called 13th check. Article 15 are just various changes in the local firefighters association. We have some 800 local firefighter associations all across the state. One of the things we're trying to do here is to create a study for a statewide plan. This does not mandate it. Any will go into the plan, but I think the goal and the range is that some of these local plans just do a lousy job of investing their money, and we would like to at some point probably bring them in and have their money put within the State Board of Investment. But the ones that are doing a good job at this moment, there is no plan, as I say, to have them rolled into some statewide plan. But this goes on in study. Now, the study is going to be funded, and here's a fiscal issue, by a loan from PERA to this, and then it's going to be paid back. So it doesn't require an appropriation, but there is some money moving around there. Article 16 is an issue which I will tell you does have some concerns by the governor's office. Was brought to me by AFSCME that when a member is in the active fund, they can have their dues withheld from their paycheck to a specified labor organization. But when you retire and you go into the post fund, you don't have the dues taken out. This would have been a voluntary thing for anybody who wanted to have their dues voluntarily taken out of their retirement check to be submitted to a labor organization. As I say, the governor's office expressed some concern about this. I'm not exactly sure what the concerns are, but I'm just bringing that to your attention as well. Article 17 just has a number of small individual or small group provisions. Bills from Senator Senjum, Senator Metzen, Senator Limmer, Senator Marty, Representative Wardlow, Senator Paraso, Senator Dill, Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson, that was a St. Paul employee who was incorrectly excluded from a plan for 2 years. Senator Cohen, you had the four school board members to make contributions for past school board service. Representative Hoppe. So, Mr. Chair, that is a quick summary. I do have two amendments here. One is an issue that just came up this last week, and if you have the 1A amendment, copies of that.
Okay, if
you could distribute both of them. There's a 1A amendment and there's a 2A amendment. The 1A amendment deals with an issue that just came to our attention. The current law requires that in order for a tribal police chief to get into PERA, it has to be approved with a letter from the Internal Revenue Service. But the federal law changed in 2006, so the IRS doesn't issue those letters anymore. And apparently in one part of the state, there was a tribal police chief who was just hired with the assurance that he would be going into PERA. Apparently he's highly regarded. They want to keep him. But in order to keep him, he's got to go into PERA, but we can't do it because the current statute requires that there has to be this IRS letter, which is no longer applicable. So this just strikes some current law on that IRS requirement, and PERA is fine with this. They figured that this actually should have been done about 2 years ago. So I'll move the 1A amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Betzel, is it retroactive then?
It's going to be effective the day following enactment, which will meet the needs of this in particular individual.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we have Senator Betzel's motion on the 1A amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, there's a 2A amendment, and I described the process by which we are changing some funds around between the teacher funds, and part of it is going to go to the I'm sorry. This is a copy of it right here. But in order to make the 140 contribution to the to help the pension commission hire an actuary, we have a bit of a gap in this the current fiscal year. So this just provides that the money would remain as unpaid is payable to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund, which is where it would have come out of anyway next year. So this keeps it where it started from. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move a 2A amendment.
Okay, let's wait until it's been distributed.
So what do you mean remains unpaid as the date of enactment? I guess I didn't understand your explanation.
Mr. Martin.
Yeah, I'm Larry Martin from the staff of the Pension Commission. Yeah. After the Minneapolis teacher consolidation in attempts to clean up portions of 354A, which is the first class city teacher pension plan law, the provision that automatically redistributed what was the former Duluth teacher pension aid got garbled, and the Department of Finance did pay the St. Paul teachers their fiscal year 2007 payment, notwithstanding the garbling, but decided that they could not pay the 2008 amount pending a clarification in the statute. What happened is the language basically got dropped inadvertently, and no provision was made to cover the gap. So that's why they've been holding the amount in escrow, awaiting the legislature clarifying the law. The original bill clarified it for both TRA and for St. Paul teachers. When Duluth teachers was reallocated their aid in the future, and TRA was reduced in the amount of aid they would get, we successfully clarified the gap for TRA, but neglected to clarify the gap for St. Paul teachers. So this clarifies the gap in the same way for St. Paul teachers as the bill as you have before you does for TRA.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Babbitt.
Mr. Martin, then, is this the $140,000 that's being used to pay for the auditor?
Mr. Chair, members, it's the same $140,000. It's a different year. This is for the current year, fiscal year 2008. The money that goes for the actuary starts in fiscal 2009. And what would happen is if this was not added to the language, this would go to the general fund rather than the St. Paul teachers. And this fiscal year, 2008 fiscal year.
And members, we've had distributed a summary Mr. Mossman had prepared relative to general fund impacts, and this amendment is noted in the second section of that handout. Further discussion on the 2A amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, let me just note one or two other issues that have a fiscal issue with this bill. We've talked about the redirection of the aid within the teachers' fund. There's also a provision in Article 9, Section 3, where we used to have a number of local police and firemen associations that subsequently were rolled into the state PERA fund. We've been making payments to some of them to help ease the transition. This currently just extends it because it was due to expire, and this just extends it for the time being. As for that, legislators plan, there could actually be some savings to if legislators opt to go into the general plan, that is defined benefit plan, then actually the member of the House or the Senate would actually be getting less of a contribution to his fund, so the House and the Senate would save money for those new legislators that actually contribute. We're not talking about a lot of money, but there's a slight fiscal savings to the legislative for those people who happen to choose the general defined benefit plan as opposed to the unclassified defined contribution plan.
In their first year of service.
In the first year of service, yes. They have to make that choice, yes. Mr. Chair, members, that is the bill, and I stand for any questions.
Okay. Further questions or discussion? Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make an oral amendment on page 91, line 22. And Senator Betzold had mentioned that that this had been a point of controversy. I think it still is somewhat a point of controversy. I would like to delete the words after the identity and. those two words, identity and, on line 22. And members, I understand that it's it may be appropriate to negotiate the number of available vendors that would be available for the annuity contracts, but I don't know that it should be negotiated that they would who would be providing the services. I don't know that we have negotiations to determine, for example, which vendors we use for health care services and other services that other public entities provide. I think the employer typically gets to pick those providers, and I don't understand why this has been inserted in here, and I don't think it's appropriate. And so I see that we have the Education Minnesota folks at the table.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Ms. Allswiger on this point.
Ms. Allswiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. The reason this all came about is because a number of school districts would have policies so that if there were maybe two or three teachers that wanted to have a particular 403B vendor, the district would then allow the payroll deductions and so on. So we had districts that had a significant number of 403B vendors that they had to take to keep track of. And recently, the Osseo School District decided to go from either 22 or 24 vendors to one vendor. And it was one vendor that wasn't even one of the prior vendors that had been offered before. And there was a lawsuit, and Education Minnesota Osseo lost the case. And in the opinion, it listed that Education Minnesota Osseo might well want to seek legislative remedy for this issue, and so that's what we are doing. Now, this is employees' money. This is the money that they have negotiated or it's their own additional money that they're putting in. And one of the reasons for 403Bs was for the purpose of letting employees choose where and how much money they put into these funds. If, as in this court decision, if the employer is given the sole authority to make those decisions, now we have employees' money being put exactly where, in this case, the identity would be taken out, that the school district would be able to make all the decisions about where that money is put. Now, here's another thing that I recently learned, that there have been some situations I don't know if it's been in the school districts or not, because there's been more freedoms in the past until this Osseo situation. But in one particular case in a state system, the state system was making decisions about the 403B vendors based on whether or not the vendor would pay for the administrative costs, and taking not into regard anything about the rate of return or the fees. Meaning that if we go with this amendment, the district could decide to work out agreements with 403B vendors where the vendor pays the administrative fees, but the employee has the extra fees that have to be paid, and the employee will have no choice about the vendor based on the rate of return and the history that this vendor has shown. Again, this is employee money. Employees should be part of making the decisions. We are not saying that the employee should be the sole determining factor. We believe that just like with insurance plans, there are usually labor management committees that talk about those types of things. Those aren't necessarily collectively bargained, but the who's eligible and who pays for the insurance is collectively bargained. And currently 403B's language is currently bargained to determine how much the district would contribute, and we think that this makes a lot of sense. And again, I'll just remind you, this is employees' money. They should have some say. It should not be in the hands only of the school district to make those decisions.
Mr. Chair,
just a side issue. A half hour ago, I saw Senator Pogemiller, and I advised him that I'd be presenting the bill in the Finance Committee, and he's aware of that. So I asked him to hold off on the floor session until we were done here. So I know we have a floor session 11, but he's aware that we're here. So,
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Either Senator Bitzold or Ms. Altweger, are the 403Bs are they pre-tax type of investments so that you're not paying the tax, and so therefore that's an authority that's given through the employer, presumably?
Right.
And then you're talking about are there matches? Does the employer match what you put in, or are there limits to how does that work? Because you said something about employer contributions to it.
Mr. Martin.
Yes, members, to provide factual background, I'm not in the middle of whether
right.
you should or should not do this. 403Bs can be employee-funded only, or there can be an employer match under a provision in Chapter 356 of Minnesota statutes. The
matching Mr. Chair, which I presume would be negotiated.
It is bargained, and there can be restrictions on the vendors. But it's multiple vendors, and it is a collectively bargained. This authority that you're looking at here is for the individual member-funded only 403B annuities. They are pre-tax dollars. But that's coming not so much from the employer as the federal tax code in the early 50s carved out tax-sheltered annuities for educational employees as a tax-deferred a retirement savings vehicle. So it's educational, not that they're educational. It also is for some nonprofit hospital, healthcare, and museum employees also.
So, Mr. Chairman, what I was trying to get at is if it's the individual's money, why wouldn't they have the choice of where to put it? But they only have the choice to put it, it's the pre-tax thing, if it's under the control of the schools. That somehow that's what carries that particular advantage so that you're able to actually invest more
yes,
in
Mr.
it.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That then puts the employer in a position of having some say of where it goes.
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's the fact that it's a deduction from somebody's pay before they receive the pay, and that's where the employer comes involved. They have to make the actual a deduction and transfer the money to someone. And this is a question of who it gets transferred to.
Further discussion on Senator Roblin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess my main concern is the precedent that it sets. I think that we have not traditionally negotiated vendors in this area or in many other areas of benefits. And I know that we negotiate benefits, but we don't necessarily negotiate vendors. And so I just have a concern about the precedent that it establishes, and I don't know that it's a wise one to set. And I know the school boards have had a problem with it. I don't know that anyone's here today from their group, but in another committee where this was heard, they did testify against this provision.
Okay, we have Senator Roebling's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
No.
No.
Motion fails. Further discussion on Senate File 2720. Senator Bitzold?
Sure, I believe Ms. Olswager does want to testify on other aspects of the bill, too.
Okay, Ms. Olswager?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Committee, General for Education of Minnesota, and I commend Senator Bitzold for the fine work that he has done on the pension bill. And this issue that I'm going to bring up, he's very well aware of it, and I need to go on record of stating a concern about one of the provisions. Included in this pension bill is a merger of the active and the post funds. That is the three pension funds, PERA, MSRS, and TRA. I want to make sure that you are aware that the employee groups that belong to MSRS and PERA are supportive of the merger of the active in the post funds. TRA members, however, Education Minnesota members, I should say, are not supporting the merger of the active and the post fund. Why? Because there is a deficit in the post fund. The TRA portion is said to be $1.1 billion. If you merge the post fund with the active fund, just a little bit more explanation. When you are actually teaching, your money goes into the active fund, and then usually that fund helps to determine whether or not you can afford pension benefit improvements. Once you retire, your money then goes into a post fund, and your retirement benefits are paid for from the post fund. Now, there have been some significant payouts from the post fund. There was a time when the retirees received very significant increases, 10, 11, 12%, because of the way the law was written. And the legislature did not change that until a couple years ago when there was a 5% cap. And once these retirees received this increase, their base increased, and then they got another increase that was a nice increase, and it increased. And eventually, over time, that, along with other things, had an impact on the post fund till the post fund in total has a deficit of $2.4 billion. It was not long ago, a couple years ago, that it was a deficit of $4 billion. It has greatly improved. The post fund right now, according to the latest official actuarial figure, I believe is at 92% funded. There was a testifier in the other body who said that from the pension fund that said that once we get down to 80%, we'll never get out of it. Well, look at the figures that they have. In 2003, the post fund was at 78%. Just 5 years ago, it was at 78%, and it has made increases to 2007, where it was at 92%. Yes, the stock market has taken a dip, and it has gone down. If the actuary did the figures, it would not be 92% anymore. But it has also gone up, and it will go down, and it will go up. It isn't urgent, it isn't necessary today to fix the merger of the post fund. So why is this such a big issue? Because when you merge the post fund with the active fund, you now have taken the debt in the post fund and put it on the shoulders of the active members. And if you need to fix that post fund, the way to fix it is to put more money into it. Who would you ask to put more money into it? You can't ask the retirees because the retirees don't have a way to contribute. You'd be asking the active members to do that or the state. The state has a fiscal crisis. You're probably not going to get money from the state, so you're going to ask for it from the employees. What's the second part of the problem to that? Minnesota teachers, when you compare Minnesota teacher pension plan to the other 34, the total 34 states that are coordinated with Social Security, are at the bottom of nearly every single pension category. We're tied for last place in High Five. We're approximately number 28 and number 33 in our formula multiplier. We are one of only a few states that tax their retirees' benefits at 100%. We are the employer contribution is nearly at the bottom. And what one factor do you suppose is above average? The employee contribution. We have to fix Minnesota teacher pension benefits. And we will not be able to do that if we merge the active and the post funds. This isn't a crisis, so what we are asking people to do is to take out the TRA merger and let the other two funds merge. Let us have a win-win solution by fixing the post fund situation and fixing the teacher pension benefit structure so that Minnesota teachers are at least at average. And we could do that within another year, come back to the legislature with a phase-in situation. So we would ask your support support on our position for that. And again, it has always been a pleasure to work with Senator Betzold, and he's done some fine work on the pension bill. This is just one provision that we have a serious concern about.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Betzold,
briefly, the merger issue is not just something that just has come out of the blue recently. The legislative auditor studied pensions and released a report about a year or so ago, recommending this very thing, and this has been in the works for quite a long time. I would agree that teacher pensions, are low, and we need to do something about it. We can't do it this year. And in fact, I had a fiscal note drawn up. It would take about $60 million a year to provide for an enhanced teacher benefit so that they could retire by the age of 62. That's not going to happen. And even if we tried to do it, any bill that would enhance anybody's pension would be dead on arrival in the governor's office, even if the legislature even passed it this year. One issue has nothing to do with the other. The merger of the funds is one issue. Trying to deal with the teachers' pensions is a different issue. The Pension Commission is committed to continue discussion, try to find some solution over the interim. We're obviously not going to solve that part of it this year, but we are committed to going ahead with the merger issue.
Okay, thank you. Further, Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During the course of meeting with various teachers, I was told that the number one goal was the rule of 90. And is there any movement in that area these folks could
Mr. Chair and Senator Foley and members, I wanted to get some discussion going on. I introduced the bills to reinstate Rule of 90. Rule of 90 is not and it cannot happen. It was abolished about 20 years ago because, frankly, people were retiring too early. Rule of 90 means you take your age plus years of service, and if it equals 90, you get to retire at that. So if you started teaching at age 24 and you worked for 33 years as a teacher, by the time you're age 57, 33 years, that's 90. People were retiring too early. People were living longer 20 years ago and are even living longer today, which means that they keep drawing the retirement checks. They weren't contributing enough money into the fund. Also other things in the economy, and as Ms. Alzwager stated about people getting too generous of benefits, there's a lot of teachers that frankly want to, they say it's an equity issue. Other people got to retire at age 57 and 58. I should too. That can't happen because people are working longer. They are living longer. They need to make the contributions to retire. We all love to retire earlier. It's just not going to happen. But as I say, just to get them to age 62 is going to be $60 million a year.
Further question, Sharon Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Betzold, what article is the merger of the TRA active and post?
Article 2.
That is Article 2. And does that article also include the merger of the other funds?
It's all of them, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas.
Okay, so there's agreement in the other funds that there should be the merger?
Yes.
And why does the Pension Commission want to move ahead on this merger when there's not agreement? What's the advantages to doing it?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, the funds agree with that. With two of the funds, the members agree with that, too. As I say, the argument that Education Minnesota has basically made, and you've heard it here today, is it's unfair to put the liabilities of the post fund on the current employees, but it's also unfair to have current employees retire and go into an underfunded post fund. Mr. Thompson is here from TRA, and he can discuss TRA's position on this.
Ms. Nelson.
And Chairman, Luther Thompson, representing TRA. TRA certainly does support the language in the omnibus pension bill. The merger is a possibility, but the financial statements for all three pension funds already report the post and active funds together. They are combined. The deficiency that's reported there reflects the post fund deficiency. Our board worked with the other two boards over the past year. This was regarded as the best practice for the pension funds. The legislative auditor strongly recommended this language, and that the if the market deteriorates to where those triggers would be put into effect, it's a matter of the fiduciary responsibility of the fiduciaries of the fund to ensure that something would happen that the funds didn't deteriorate any further. And that's why this language was put in. It was agreed upon by the three funds. We have representatives from teachers groups in Minneapolis that support it. We certainly have all the retiree groups that support it. And our board certainly doesn't think there's a linkage between the post-fund reforms and a benefit improvement. Our board clearly supports a benefit improvement for teachers that's adequately funded. Unfortunately, the funding isn't there this year, so that the bottom line is we support the bill as it is written, and we strongly support its passage.
Thank you. Further questions on Senate File 2720? If not, Senator Betzel moves that Senate File 2720 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries, and